According to a tablet, he compensated the few people who were living near Khorsabad for their land and then dedicated it to the god Ashur. So this shows his attention to justice and fair play. He is paying for land for his new capital. Sargon's ambitions are clear from the outline of the city walls. The square-shaped plan required walls of about 1 mile on each side. There are many letters in Sargon's archive about the building project. He was clearly a severe supervisor. One letter orders, send 700 bales of straw and 700 bundles of reeds, each bundle more than a donkey can carry. They must be in Dur Sharrukin by such and such date. Should even one day pass by, you will die. Trouble with contractors, as many of us have experienced. Letters about transporting materials, timber, especially cedar from Lebanon, labor, finished sculpture, including massive stone sculptures, all appear in Sargon's archive. One letter reports that a boat carrying the bull colossi had sunk on the river, and it had to be raised. One report describes an earthquake at Dur Sharrukin. Even though there was not much damage to the king's city, surely this must have been interpreted as a bad omen, because we remember how important natural disasters and natural events were in Mesopotamian thought. Within the city was a walled-off citadel that held his palace and a temple. The palace was on a platform and had a view over the city and the entire plain. It was quite extensive, over 200 rooms, the traditional decoration that we've come to expect from Assyrian palaces. And this would give the palace the links necessary with past rulers to show that Sargon was a legitimate ruler, even though he may not have been able to name his father in his inscriptions. One note about the reliefs of Dur Sharrukin, when they were excavated in the 19th century AD, the boats that were carrying these reliefs back to the Louvre sank on the Tigris River, and they have not been recovered. The city was built in about a decade and populated with displaced peoples from all over the Assyrian Empire. Sargon lived in his new city for only a few years before he was killed in battle in 705 BC. No successors lived there because of the bad omen of Sargon's death on the battlefield, and Dur Sharrukin was abandoned as an administrative center, although it was still occupied. Turning from Dur Sharrukin to Nimrud, there is one more piece of evidence for Sargon's reign. A mid-9th century BC burial of Assyrian queens was found beneath Assurbanipal's palace at Nimrud. It was discovered in 1989 by Iraqi archaeologists. Kings in Assyria were buried at Ashur, and queens were buried at Nimrud. The tombs were built, chamber tombs. They were unrobbed and filled with gold jewelry, vessels, and semi-precious stones. An inscription on a mirror refers to Sargon II's queen, Ataliya, and other inscriptions on valuable objects refer to earlier queens, so they may have been heirlooms. A curse tablet threatens those who would disturb the burial and gives the name of the deceased, Queen Yaba, who was the wife of Tiglath-Pileser III, you remember Sargon's predecessor. The curse threatens that if anyone removed her body from the tomb, stole her jewelry, or placed another woman in the tomb, that they would be cursed, and their spirit would wander in perpetuity, and they would receive no food or drink in their afterlife. You remember that one of the tasks of the surviving family members was to provide these offerings for the dead. There were, in fact, two skeletons in the sarcophagus in Queen Yaba's tomb, and the second burial is probably that of Ataliya, Sargon II's wife. These tombs are filled with gold jewelry, including a headdress that recalls the Ur III headdress of the Queen Puabi. Several pairs of bracelets, foot rings, necklaces, and gold chokers were found. So this is another impressive display of objects in a royal tomb. And you remember that in the royal cemetery, there were examples of large-scale human sacrifice. There is no evidence of that here, but it reminds us that this earlier evidence was an exceptional event for mass murder, suicide, or sacrifice. Here, the grave goods exemplify the wealth that is cataloged in the tribute lists and also shows the importance of the royal house. In the next lecture, we will focus on the ideology of the Assyrian king. Although Sargon had no legitimate claim to the throne, he used these images to help ensure that he was seen as the true ruler, and he carried out what he was supposed to be doing as king through his successes in war, as a builder, and as an administrator. By the end of Sargon's reign, the Assyrians were the leading power in the Near East and expanded its borders to include northern and southern Mesopotamia, Syria, and Palestine. His successor, Sennacherib, shared his father's determination to control his empire. His attacks on two cities, Jerusalem and Babylon, were recounted by his enemies.